At AVNR, our mission is to humanize robotics. We decided to create this podcast series to help you demystify the world of robotics and discover what some of the brightest minds in the field are doing. Welcome to Robotics for All Podcasts by AVNR.
In this episode, we're excited to welcome Robert Wesley, who is the Supplier Program Manager for Boeing Defense, Space, and Security. Robert not only dedicates his time to Boeing, but is also passionate about the progression of minorities within the science, technology, engineering, and math fields. Within Boeing, their Autonomous Systems Division focuses on developing unmanned vehicles that operate in the sea, across the ground, in the air, and beyond Earth's atmosphere. Robert takes us on a journey through some of the programs he was part of, including the MQ-25, an uncrewed aircraft used to refuel fighter jets, and the MQ-28, which is essentially an autonomous smart team player, helping existing crewed fighter jets project their force in combat situations. Tune in for an eye-opening conversation covering some of the most advanced robotics that are changing the landscapes of land, sea, and air. Hope everyone enjoys the show. Here we go. Hi, Rob. Thanks for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks, Michael. Good afternoon. You know, so glad to be here with the podcast show. So, you know, really great to be a guest on here.
Yeah, right on. No, really, really happy to have you. Let's jump right in. Rob, tell me a bit about yourself, your background, and what got you interested in STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math growing up.
Okay. Yeah, great. So a little bit about my background. So I'm originally from Jackson, Mississippi. So I went to Howard University undergrad and graduate. I got my undergrad in mechanical engineering, and I got my MBA in supply chain and marketing. So that really, I think, set me up for a great foundation into the STEM field. And what really inspired me to get into STEM to begin with was my grandfather and his legacy. So he was one of few African-American electricians that have his own business in Nashville, Mississippi. And I believe that has really, you know, had a great influence of success for me and really helped me pursue STEM as a career. And a little bit about my career within Boeing currently right now. So my position is within the supply chain function, but mainly kind of a programmatic focus. So my position is a supplier program manager, and on a macro level, my day-to-day tasks include partnering with program management, engineering functions, finance, supply chain, across the division, and ultimately I'm looking at ways that I can develop strategies that drive and deliver the best value for Boeing. And it's really different from like the Boeing defense side, it's different from the commercial side, being that, you know, this division and on the defense side really encompasses a vast unique portfolio of products. So that can be anywhere from like satellites to autonomous vehicles to commercial derivative aircraft and missiles and weapons and other unique proprietary stuff that we can't even talk about on this line. So,
yeah,
you know, that's a little bit about my background, my career, and kind of how I've gotten really interested in STEM.
Wow. Very cool. Very cool. Yeah. And you started to talk a little bit about Boeing, and it's, you know, Boeing's such a big company, and there's, it gets into so many different things, but you know, when we started talking together, it was really around the Boeing autonomous systems, and you've gotten involved in a couple of areas. So even that Boeing autonomous systems seems to be a pretty broad group that touch a lot of different areas. So, you know, what were some of the key areas of focus that you got into?
Yeah, so a lot of majority of my career within Boeing has been in this autonomous system space. Boeing's autonomous platform and products span across air, sea, and space. And I've only got to experience a piece of it with the space, with the air piece of it. And I know key mission areas focus for Boeing shift as the customer requirements and capabilities, come to fruition. But one of the key themes that Boeing has is integrating and delivering autonomous capabilities from seabed to space for customers worldwide. So, you know, whether it's, you know, a sea-based platform or space platform, you know, for autonomous systems, they are going to have that same theme, you know, as Boeing, you know, develops and puts out that new development technology. And I think the other thing, a piece of it is autonomy is really, you know, a key piece of that in defining what the next 100 years is going to look like for autonomous capabilities. And I think Boeing is really helping to drive that safe innovation and integration of autonomy to maximize the human potential for those autonomous platforms.
Yeah, yeah. Why is autonomy such a big deal? Like, what are the? Give me some of the, you know, what is the? Is it keeping people out of harm's way, or is it, you know, doing things with fewer people, or what was such a big deal for Boeing? Why that autonomy is important?
You know, I think autonomy really helps revolutionize the ways humans connect, protect, and explore and inspire those, you know, autonomous technologies. So, you know, autonomy doesn't just touch the unmanned product, but it's also about, you know, how do you innovate in areas like persistence, intelligence, things like that. So autonomy is where the human interaction comes to fruition as far as developing that software, developing that code that, you know, the autonomous vehicle would go execute to you know, really fulfill that mission set that it's doing. So that's kind of how I see the two being part of a really good tandem going forward. But autonomy is going to really be a key for it because, you know, from my sense, autonomy is going to be the key benefactor across all the platforms. And, you know, I see the government coming towards like a common autonomy platform theme going forward once we reach that, you know, potential of, you know, this is going to be across all military platforms or U.S. government, you know, capabilities.
Yeah. Yeah. How long has the division been like its own separate kind of initiative?
Yeah. So I think I joined Boeing in 2018. So it's been a minute that has been in fruition. It's, you know, we've gone through different reorgs where now it's, you know, rolls under a different org now within autonomous systems. But, you know, it spans so much of different capabilities from, like I said, it's like sea, land, air, and space, that it always has a little bit of, you know, construct or part of the different key areas within Boeing right now.
Right. You know, preparing for this, I went through a couple of the YouTube videos of different people talking about Boeing autonomous systems. And, you know, I think the one common one that came up that's been around a while, they all kind of said, well, there's always been a part of autonomy has always been important to us. So landing an airplane, majority of the landing procedures are done autonomously now. So they have software that lands a lot of the commercial flights and helps a pilot, you know, navigate that aspect, which it's already touched a lot of us from that aspect.
Yeah. And it's super helpful for other pilots too, because, you know, you have the pilot there to make sure the plane lands safely, but you also have the software there backing up, you know, if something goes wrong or something is off within that landing, or it's, you know, sometimes takeoff and then taxiing, you know, from one location to the next.
Yeah. Yeah. So a good portion of your experience is around air. Let's talk about some of the different applications that you're a part of that you can share with us.
Yeah, so some of the different applications that I've been part of, you know, a lot of it has been within the air. Three specific platforms right now come to mind as far as my experience. MQ-25, which is our, you know, unmanned aircraft system that's designed for the Navy mission for refueling. And, you know, it can refuel various fighter jets, things like that. And it's really refueling autonomy and seamless carrier deck integration is going to be, you know, key for the Navy going forward. And that's what that platform is, you know, started to, you know, really develop and make a lot of strides for with the Navy. NQ-28 is the other platform that I was part of. So that's a uncrewed aircraft that designed, built out of Australia, utilizing artificial intelligence to be a force multiplier for some of the most elite air power systems. So it's designed to work kind of in a teaming with other fighter military aircraft to really amplify the airborne capability and missions that it can execute.
Okay.
And then lastly being, you know, KF-16, which is kind of the full-scale aerial target. So it's retrofitting a lot of the F-16 fighter jets to be more aerial targets for the purpose of testing and new development weapons and tactics, things like that for that customer. So those are really the three, you know, major platforms I was part of. Some of the applications that I was particularly a part of within those was, you know, creation of like sourcing strategies, supplier strategies, integration of, you know, supplier technologies with Boeing capabilities to execute customer's mission, defining and executing engineering trade studies for new business introductions, leading a supply chain architecture for new development platforms, and then, you know, the normal proposal development, because with each of these development programs, it's a need to, you know, bid that product or that process to the government for, you know, funding and getting that funding process moving forward. And then lastly, being, you know, program performance improvements, because with every program that rolls out, you need to, you know, tactic and tweak that to make sure it is really, you know, to the customer's requirements and is going to be a success for the future. So that's a little bit of you know, applications and how I've navigated my career within Boeing within the autonomous airspace.
Yeah, sure. Oh, very cool. Very cool. So the first one you mentioned was around refueling. Mm-hmm. So what were some of the, you know, what were the enhancements that the autonomy provided? Was it, you know, that you're able to refuel faster, or was it with less errors? I'm guessing lining up the airplanes for the refueling process is a difficult procedure. So what were some of the benefits that came out of this?
So I think it's really making sure the nozzles and everything connect. So, you know, air refueling is no easy feat, but it's also very important, especially autonomously for the platform. So it's making sure that nose and the touch points there are connecting appropriately. And also it's tracking the location of the actual military aircraft that it's refueling to. So it's making sure that it understands, like, this is the location I need to go to. This is how I'm going to refuel it. And this is where I need to navigate the nose to make sure it, you know, connects properly to start, you know, giving the fuel to the military aircraft.
Right. And do you have a sense of, like, how autonomous that is? I guess you have a fighter jet and then you have the refueling aircraft. And on both sides, are they hands off, or so it's both controls are handed over to this autonomous I don't know, what would you call it, like a drone or something like that, autonomous intelligence to make it happen?
No, so I you know, it's all ground communication. So you have ground communications from the source in the base. It tells the drone, you know, where to go, and then that, you know, communicates with the aircraft. You know, they get that communication with the aircraft to make sure that they're lining up locations to make sure they're syncing up properly. And then once the drone is approaching, it's pretty much the drone's, you know, role to make sure it's connecting appropriately. I know a lot of retrofitting and, you know, troubleshooting, you know, is underway right now, but, you know, that is the goal of how it refuels that vehicle.
Right. So, you know, what role does a person play in, you know, controlling and working with these types of systems? Is it, you know, just activating, or is it monitoring, or how do you guys see the people interacting with them?
Yeah, so it's like you hit the nail on the head, you know, monitoring and making sure that the actions are being executed appropriately, because you still have the ground communications piece of it. So it's telling the drone this is what you need to do ahead of time, and then ensuring that it's, you know, tracking appropriately, because we have the monitoring systems in place from the drone to make sure that it's feeding back that information. So you get that constant feedback from the drone and the application, and also the aircraft, the manned aircraft that is, you know, helping the team or refuel, to make sure that everything's aligned. So you have that human element to make sure that you have the background to, you know, abort if needed or adjust appropriately.
Yeah. You know, I want to ask you, you know, how is this going to change the way we lived our day-to-day life? But, you know, to be honest, you know, with a couple of the two big wars going on right now, it's entered our day-to-day lives, and we see on television many examples of how drones are used and autonomous systems are used in day-to-day combat. But if we take ourselves out of, you know, the defense and that type of stuff, do you have how do you expect our day-to-day lives to be changed, and, you know, non-defense applications?
Yeah. Yeah, so I definitely think it certainly will change our day-to-day lives. I mean, we've already started to see, you know, Tesla with their vehicles as far as, you know, driving remotely or autonomously. More of those are coming out right now. And that's just from the Lance aspect of it. You know, drones are being used to deliver medicine, relief. They're a lot of the mundane and redundant tasks that we're seeing and doing day to day. I see that being executed by drones, especially across air travel, public transportation, potentially exploration is already being undertaken from like a sea and space standpoint. And a lot of the integration aspects of that, you know, package deliveries, things like that, or even, you know, that type of stuff is, I see that, you know, more shifting towards the drone robots.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the previous podcasts I did was with a company that they specialized in GPS denied environments, and they were using drones for exploring mines and abandoned mm-hmm. mines and mapping out as they, you know, there's maybe another round of excavation that, or extraction of minerals and stuff like that from the mines that a company may want to do. So they used drones to go in and survey the area so they could start the planning process. Yeah. And it just kept people out of the way. Those are hazardous spaces. You're not sure what's in there over time, what's happened over time to that area.
Exactly. I mean, you know, from a sea standpoint, it's like mines that we're not aware of that, you know, are at depths that, you know, haven't been explored, that they're yeah. mapping, you know, what is that underwater environment really look like that we haven't been able to, you know, explore as much previously from a man standpoint. You can't send a man down there as deep as a robot or a drone can go.
Yeah. That's a whole other world down there. So generally in the world of, you know, robotics and drones, what are some of the more interesting applications you've seen, whether it's been what you've worked on or, mm-hmm. you know, you just came across you've had some pretty good exposure and some interesting backgrounds. So I'd love to hear about what are some of the more intriguing ones that you feel.
Yeah. So, and the funny thing about it, before, you know, we jumped on the show, I, you know, talked with some colleagues in the yeah. storage area, you know, industry, and I didn't realize that they were, you know, potentially using drones to operate and maintain sub-zero storage facilities. I thought that was extremely interesting and, you know, eye-opening, because I didn't know drones were being utilized in that, you know, in that aspect. Yeah. And I thought it was a brilliant idea. You know, they're experiencing high levels of safety and human concern, you know, being the temperatures being like negative 15 that they have to go in and maintain. And then people can only stay in like a few seconds at a time. But, you know, if a drone or robot operates that facility, then it's, you know, they could be a lot more efficient, a lot more, you know, safety conscious, because you're not having that person being exposed to that level of temperature for very yeah. long times. But, you know, I thought that was, you know, very interesting for my spaces. You know, it's out completely outside of aerospace and defense, but it's something that I didn't think about, that they were, you know, drones were being able to be used for currently.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think about, let's say, Amazon and their warehousing. So yeah. it's pretty common knowledge that a lot of robotics are used for maintaining those and prime one day delivery mm-hmm. and being able to do the logistics for that. I didn't think about sub-zero facilities. And
yeah, same here. That's when I heard about it, I was like, wow, this is a brilliant idea. But it's also, from a safety standpoint, it's, you know, substantial as far as, you know, driving safety concerns, quality metrics down. But I thought it was, you know, I thought it was eye-opening, and it was a perfect timing with, you know, jumping on this podcast to talk about that type of, you know, game-changing technologies that, you know, not a lot of people are aware of.
Yeah. So as you have your conversations and, you know, you look at, do your supply chain optimizations and stuff. So there's obviously gaps, you know, we're not fully, there's no fully autonomous driving yet. Mm-hmm. You know, there's different levels that people believe that we're at, but over the next 4 to 5 years, what developments could be important for the industry?
Yeah. So over the next 4 to 5 years, I really see, you know, space being a major player in the next 4 to 5 years, because I think we're just tipping the the edge of what we can do from a autonomous space exploration, you know, identifying, you know, habitable life outside of Earth, really understanding that you know, complete ecosystem that we're in right now. And really the next piece of it, as you look at that, you know, what are the policies and things like that are going to enable true urban air mobility? So I know that's something that's on the forefront, but it's not really there yet. Same with autonomous driving. And that's something that I think is going to be shifting the landscape going forward, especially with new policies and things that need to be put in place to make sure that we have a good box and bubble around how these technologies can be utilized safely going forward.
Yeah. There's been a lot of talk about air taxis and that sort of. So do you think that that's close in terms of being able to have a air taxi in the city? I know here in Montreal, it's between the volume of traffic and the amount of construction. I would love to have an air taxi to get me from the east end of town where I live to the south shore where I work, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're close. I think some key companies are right there, you know, starting to develop and starting doing like first flights or, you know, takeoff landings at certain locations. So I think we're there. I think it's just about how those companies are rolling it out coming up and how they're adhering to like government policies that are going to be shaping how that's going to be utilized.
Yeah, absolutely. Very cool. So what sparked your interest in robotics? How did you stumble into this career?
No, so new technology has always been something that's been interesting for me. I think as technology has matured over the years, autonomous technologies has grew more and more of an interest for me. And I think about, you know, this is probably dating myself, but, you know, the Jetsons cartoon back when they, you know, saw all the different moving parts and, you know, things that are moving autonomously and they just jump in, you know, basically a urban mobility car and you're over to your next location. But I see that as, you know, something similar to how where I see the society moving forward in the future along that thing with all the new developments that are coming across.
Yeah. Well, you're in good company anyways, in terms of dating yourself here. So I definitely remember the Jetsons and one of the cool applications that I saw. So I'm fortunate to get to some of the air shows and this is not around the Jetsons, but around the Star Wars. So, you know, some of the speeders that they would ride through through the desert and sometimes through the forest. Some of the air shows that I saw, there was, you know, larger drone style systems where you'd have four propellers, but then it would be outfitted like a speeder where it'd be a single person. You could sit on it. Right. And you have your controls and it would fly like a drone. So it would come up and then you would be able to take off. But that's the closest I've seen to some of those speeders. And so they were going through all the regulations and flight testing and making sure it was balanced and stuff like that. But really amazing stuff.
Yeah. I mean, those air shows are always like great to go visit and understand kind of what that next technology they're bringing out, because I think companies are like really do an amazing job as far as bringing that next technology, you know, 5-10 years down the road. This is something that we're thinking about or currently developing to bring to light. And I think that's an amazing, you know, type of product that you just saw. I mean, you know, individual hovercraft, you know, it's an amazing.
Yeah. And for those that aren't able to go there for work, they were flying these during the public exhibitions. Oh, so if you go as a public visitor, they have their flying demonstrators. So you, depending on the schedule, you have different aircraft flying. And so it's a really cool thing to go and see if ever anybody has a chance to go.
Yeah, definitely. I would definitely encourage anyone to go visit an air show if you can.
So in your spare time, when you're not involved in robotics and autonomous systems, what do you like to do?
You know, my spare time, you know, I'm a big sports person, so I watch him, you know, play all sports. I played, you know, soccer growing up, played in college, still play to this day, not as much as anymore, but, you know, I watch soccer, football, basketball, and especially when time permits, travel.
Okay. Who's your team for soccer?
Are you talking English Premier League? Or are you talking?
Oh, their number one team. Who is it? That's the,
Yeah, so
you gotta boil it
I'm a
down.
Manchester United fan through and through,
Manchester
so
United.
I won't ever
Okay.
change that.
Yeah. Right on. Right on.
Yeah, and
You'd
then
be a,
the funny story to that, this
yeah.
combines my travel, unique travel, as well as the love for soccer. So, my wife and I traveled to London back in March of 2020, right as the pandemic was starting to, come up to this, get, started and get a better understanding about that. So we were, exploring the city together, and we were able to, book a flight to, book a train to go see the Manchester Derby.
Okay.
During that season, and unfortunately, that was the last game of that season before the pandemic shut it down for a period of time. But we were able, thankfully, we were able to get back to the U.S. because our flight was due back Saturday, and I guess the U.S. president at the time, closed the border to the U.S. that Sunday. So
Oh,
our
wow.
family members were completely freaking out, saying,
Yeah.
"You guys need to get back to earlier flight back to the U.S." But we were like, "It's only a day," so. I say that, it's a funny story now that I'm thinking back about it, but during that time, it definitely wasn't funny, but I thought it was worth it because we got to see the Manchester Derby, selfishly for me.
Yeah. But I my one European football game, it was Berlin City team against a Turkish City team. And this is back in 1999 to date myself. But what a sporting event that was. I brought my I was over there living in Germany for a couple months during school, and my sister she came over to visit, and we went to see a game, and both of us remember that one. In North America, it's hard to replicate that atmosphere of some European football, right?
Yeah, I would say even in football games, I've gone to a couple football games, and I feel like that experience, European football games are completely different from American football games as far as from a soccer standpoint.
Yeah. Great. So, last question for you. So if we've got some listeners that and if anybody's interested in getting involved in or a career in autonomous systems or engineering science, what is some advice for breaking into the field?
And I always say this is a good skill to have beyond just developing a solid knowledge base about the actual domain or area that you want to be interested in, is just a willingness to learn. I know as engineers, across electrical, mechanical, software systems, all the above, and there's that innate drive to have the ability to continuously learn something new. And I think engineers often find ways to improve or build upon a craft that they were tasked to initially at hand. But the misconception that you have to be perfect in math or science to be an engineer
Yeah.
within the STEM realm, I want to really try to disrupt that because you don't have to be perfect at math and science to be an engineer. But since technology is ever evolving and ever changing, having that level of curiosity and willingness to learn will enable anyone to, have that mindset and opportunity to make a name for yourself in the industry that you want to be a part of. So, just having that willingness to learn and curiosity in the field that you want to be in. And I think that'll, have set yourself up for a great future.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. If you had to be perfect in math or science, I wouldn't be here, that's for sure. I'd always tell my kids I keep getting better as I get older, right? So that curiosity and the hard work, combine those two things. And yeah, I agree with you. That's those would be the cornerstones of a good career. Great. Well, hey, Rob, really appreciate your time and for joining me. And look forward to, maybe catching up in the future. And if you have some cool applications that we can talk through, we should keep in touch and do this again sometime.
Yeah, absolutely, Michael. So I'd love to, talk to you again about, any game-changing technologies across the autonomous platform, especially as I'm, getting more in that realm right now. So love to, make the connection and, follow up in the near future. So, love that.
Thank you. So this concludes the episode of Robotics for All podcast by AVNR. If you don't want to miss another single episode, don't forget to subscribe to our show in your favorite podcast app. Thank you very much, everyone.
and we'll talk again soon.